It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Steve Ducey.
I'm Dana Perino.
I'm Tyrus. And this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, October 25th, 2022. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. One issue especially Republicans have been focused on ahead of these midterms has been education. One man who made this issue the heart and soul of his campaign for governor last year is now a welcome sight for GOP candidates on the campaign trail this year.
Children belong to families, not to the state. And when we see the state trying to take over that role, families are standing up.
We speak with Virginia's Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin.
I'm Dave Anthony. He knows all about dirty jobs, and millions of them are unfilled across the country. Jobs, Mike Rowe tells us, used to be thought of as dead ends.
Well, guess what? Those dead end jobs, currently defined as, say, welding or plumbing and so forth, I can tell you from experience, they're six-figure jobs.
And I'm Tammy Bruce. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Crime and inflation may be top issues for voters these midterms, but one thing especially Republicans have been focusing in on is education, in particular what is being taught. And it became an even bigger focus after this moment in Virginia's governor's debate last fall.
Yeah, I stopped the bill that I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
Virginia's former Democratic governor, Terry McAuliffe, went on to lose to Republican Glenn Youngkin. Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has made it a very big focus. Earlier this year, he signed the Parental Rights in Education Act.
We have seen a curriculum for very, very young children about sexuality and woke gender ideology. We've seen libraries that have clearly inappropriate pornographic materials for very young kids.
But as Republicans campaign on education and parental rights, what exactly could they do from a federal position given how localized education decisions are? Republican congressional candidate in Michigan, Tom Barrett, told the Fox News Rundown last week.
At the federal level, you know, in our commitment to America that the Republican conference has rolled out includes supporting a parent's bill of rights so that parents will be aware of what's in the curriculum for their kids.
Others have focused as well on the learning loss that occurred during the pandemic as most schools shut down and kids learned virtually for months. At a recent House Education and Labor hearing, Utah Republican Congressman Burgess Owens said many schools stayed closed even after they should have been opened.
We now know this is because of the immense pressure placed on school boards, school administrators, local politicians, the Biden administration, and even the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention by powerful teacher unions.
Now, the standardized test scores are in for the first time since before the pandemic. The National Assessment of Educational Progress tests show declines in reading and math abilities. On average, fourth grade math scores declined 5 points. Eighth grade math scores declined 8 points, the largest math decline on record.
There is a universal understanding that the future of our nation rests with our children and their children.
Glenn Youngkin is Virginia's Republican governor.
And providing them an excellent education opportunity to open up avenues that they haven't even dreamed of is at the heart of building the future of America. And what we've seen across the nation, and then particularly in Virginia, is that the left liberal progressive agenda was one that really wanted to water down education standards, wanted to remove parents from being primary in their children's educational life, and wanted to focus on areas of academic education that deprioritized math and reading and science and history and these most important building blocks to getting a great education. And in fact, we have seen that illuminated in such a stark way with the release of the NAEP scores, the National Report Card on Academic Achievement. Across the nation, just massive drops in academic performance. And in Virginia, the startling reality that Virginia's kids, particularly fourth grade reading and fourth grade math, fell three times faster, three times greater than the national average. And this is Virginia. We have historically prided ourselves on having the best schools. And decisions were made by local politicians, state politicians, and federal politicians to move away from these critical building blocks that we know are right. And so all elected offices, from the school board members to state General Assembly members, to governors, to senators and congressmen, and oh, by the way, to vice presidents and presidents of the nation, need to recognize that if we do not fundamentally change the direction of the educational movement that has taken over our schools, we are sacrificing our kids' future. And that's what voters spoke so loudly about last year in Virginia. And you can see it in all these races, particularly in governor's races today, where education has become one of the top two issues along with inflation and cost of living.
But what should, you know, let's say the House flips and you have now a bunch of new Republican Congress members. When you think about how local education is, what would you imagine members of Congress doing on this front? Because we've heard conservatives talk about, you know, ending the Department of Education. That would sort of be sort of the reverse about, it sounds like, what you're talking about, where there needs to be more of a priority on education.
Yeah, I would hope that conservative Republican elected leaders would candidly follow the state's leads that are fixing these problems, where we're re-empowering parents to make decisions for their children, where we're refocusing curriculum and on those areas that are most important, where we're raising standards. And oh, by the way, hold accountable the executive branch in Washington that is trying to change the way we deal with things like food stamps and Title IX over issues that in fact distract everybody from the primary focus of education, which is to teach our children how to be career ready, life ready, college ready with the skills they need. It is local, but boy, we could sure use some help from the federal government and stop pushing us to do a whole bunch of things that are counter to what we know works. What we know works is high standards, rigorous curriculum, parents being engaged, raising the ceiling and the floor, dedicated efforts to those areas that are falling behind. We know this works. It's been done in Virginia before. They ran away from it in Virginia, and that's why we're suffering right now from bad decisions that were made over the last two administrations. We're fixing it in Virginia. We could use some help from the federal government.
I know you've been on the campaign trail, helping your fellow Republicans and campaigning with them. You and Nikki Haley seem to be among the most active. Your name, though, is not one of those frequently mentioned as a potential 2024 candidate like some of the others. And we don't see some of those other Republicans out there really campaigning like you are. What do you hear from Republican candidates about why they want you on the trail with them?
Well, we did something very special last year, I think. Virginians stood up and fired the previous management and hired new management. And it was a blue state that Joe Biden had won by 10 points, and we won it by two. And that's a huge swing in a state that people thought was not just purple, but was blue. And we focused on issues that are talked about every day in kitchen tables: inflation, quality of education, safe communities, a government that works for you and stops telling you what to do all the time. And I think what I'm seeing around the country when I have the privilege to campaign with gubernatorial candidates and incumbent governors is these are the issues that have led well-governed Republican-led states out of the pandemic faster, faster job recovery, safer communities, better outcomes in the classroom. And the states led by Democrat governors have fallen down across the board. And I've been really clear. I think every state in America deserves a Republican governor. I think that's why I've been received well places that I've gone, because we've shown you can do it. And I think we've provided a real sense of optimism to outcomes in this election cycle.
I wonder if it also has to do with running a highly successful campaign in which you said thank you to President Trump for the endorsement, but it seemed as though you found a balance, I think, is what I've heard others mention. He didn't campaign with you in 2021. There was some distance noted in the media narrative, and people at the time had said, you know, this is the Youngkin playbook. Is that what's happening here to a certain extent, too, that people are copying you a bit?
Well, I do believe that what we did in 2021 was hug everybody. And that's what you need in order to bring people together, forever Trumpers and never Trumpers and libertarians and Tea Party members and, oh, by the way, lots of independents and moderates. We won the independent vote in Virginia, and we had tons of Democrats come across the aisle. And I think what we did last year was demonstrate that this is about the voters, not about politicians, but about voters. And if we go to work for people and gain their trust and bring real common sense solutions to their problems, I think voters are going to trust us. That's what we demonstrated last year, and I think that's what we're seeing across the nation right now.
As governor, you signed a law that requires parental consent before a student goes by different pronoun or proclaim gender other than what's in their student record. That also, to my understanding, means that they have to use bathrooms and facilities based on their sex at birth, not how they identify now. I know we've seen the video. There have been some student walkouts and protests at some high schools over this. But a Democratic lawmaker, I think it was in Prince William County, said that this bill you signed is a violation of the law that because it discriminates based on gender. What sort of legal pushback are you expecting or experiencing now?
Let me just begin if I can. So we, in fact, as governor, I have the ability to set the model policies in our K through 12 education. And the previous governor had set a model policy that specifically excluded parents from this most important discussion and decision. And so our model policies, didn't require a law. It's just the policy now that we get to introduce requires parents to be not just at the table, but to be at the head of the table to make these decisions. And if a child and a parent make that decision together, well, then accommodations will be made because legally they have to be made in the schools, but not until parents authorize it. Now, with regard to the comments from the legislator in Northern Virginia, I think it fully reflects and is transparent to what the left liberal progressives believe. They do believe that they know better than parents. They do believe that politicians and bureaucrats should be making these decisions for children and pushing parents out of children's lives. And you can see from the reaction afterwards that everybody was basically saying, shush, shush, you shouldn't have said that. I know that's what we believe, but you shouldn't have said it. Well, she did. It's transparent. That's what they believe. And this is why we see across the nation the same thing that happened in Virginia last year. Children belong to families, not to the state. And when we see the state trying to take over that role, families are standing up, not Republicans versus Democrats, but families are standing up and saying, no, not here. This is a big moment. And this is why I've constantly reminded everyone that while there are lots of important issues, there is no more important issue for our nation today than re-securing a quality education based on fundamental values and incorporating parents at the forefront. That is at the top of our list. And I think Americans are agreeing with us.
So just to clarify, it is not a law you signed, but it didn't go through the legislature. It's a policy you signed.
It is a policy that has been delegated to me to write by our legislature.
Okay.
So there's no legislation needed here. It exists. I had to correct a wrong that was introduced by the previous administration that specifically excluded parents. And we have corrected that. And I fully expect that local jurisdictions will adopt in accordance with the law policies that are consistent with the model policies we put out.
Finally, if I may, one more. As you campaign with people and Republicans specifically, who do you have your eye on, whether it's in Virginia or beyond? I know toss-ups range based on the outlet, like Cook and Fox and Inside Elections all have different amounts of toss-ups. But in terms of like maybe what might surprise us on November 8th, what do you think could end up being a story of the night?
Well, I've been most focused on governor races across the Commonwealth. And there have been a number of clear statements as we've run into this final couple weeks about the change needed across the nation when it comes to governors. And I've said every state deserves a Republican governor. I think we're going to see a number of incumbent Democrat governors sent home and replaced by common sense oriented Republican governors. And that's going to be great for their states.
Governor Glenn Youngkin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a blessed day.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
This is Tammy Bruce with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Millions of Americans who want to wipe out thousands of dollars in student loan debt are told to keep applying. even though an appeals court put a hold on the program President Biden put in place. He says he vowed when he was elected,
I'd make the government work and deliver for the people. A simple application process keeps that commitment just as I'm keeping my commitment to relieve student debt as borrowers recover from the economic crisis caused by the once-in-a-lifetime pandemic.
Well, six Republican-led states are among those that challenged the program, saying the president is exceeding his authority. That includes Iowa, where GOP Senator Joni Ernst tells Fox,
as Congress, we are the ones that hold the purse strings, and this should have originated with Congress. It did not.
If the program is upheld, people could have $10,000 in federal student loans forgiven, up to $20,000 if they also got a Pell Grant.
Sure, I'll forgive you for borrowing $100,000, but don't ask me to forget about it or pay for it.
Mike Rowe is an advocate for skilled labor and host of How America Works on Fox Business and Fox Nation.
Look, the diploma is a tool. It can be a very valuable tool. It's certainly a very expensive tool, but it's not a more critical tool than a diesel truck that a contractor relies upon to build your house. It's not a more important tool than a bulldozer that a contractor might purchase in order to do his job and so forth and so on. So, personally, I always felt like we're picking winners and losers when we decide what kind of investment in our future to forgive and forget. Why this and not that?
Let's talk about the contractor, the person who drives that truck, the person who operates the bulldozer. They didn't get $20,000 in a federal student loan to get that job. Do you think they feel like, hey, that's not fair?
Well, I'm hesitant to speak too loudly for anybody but me, but I'll tell you anecdotally, I've talked to hundreds of people who I met on Dirty Jobs, lots of people on How America Works. These are men and women who have expressed to me a fundamental sense that they're less valued, that their skill is less valued, that their work is less valued, and they're used to it.
Generations ago, a lot of Americans did those jobs, did or unskilled jobs, whatever you want to call them. And then there was a lot of pride when their child became the first in the family to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So college became this wonderful thing, right? I mean, you had an opportunity to use your mind to make a living as opposed to, you know, breaking your back and coming home every night.
Sure.
So what happened? I mean, it was romanticized.
Nothing in the history of this society that's valuable has increased in cost faster. Not energy, not healthcare, not food, not real estate. Nothing has become more expensive than the cost of a four-year degree. So that's the first thing to understand. Is it valuable? Sure. Is it worth it at any cost? Well, of course not. And what happened is we told an entire generation of kids that they'd be screwed if they didn't go to college. At the same time, we removed shop class from high schools, thereby proving optically there's truly nothing to see here. But we didn't stop at simply making a case for college. We had to do it by saying, and if you don't go, yeah, you're going to get stuck turning a wrench, or you're going to get stuck in some other dead-end job. Well, guess what? Those dead-end jobs, currently defined as, say, welding or plumbing and so forth, I can tell you from experience, they're six-figure jobs. And the men and women I know who are doing them, by and large, are happy, engaged, and well-balanced.
So let's take the welder.
Mm-hmm.
How does someone go from high school to being a welder making six figures, and how long would it take?
So if you learn a skill that's in demand, like welding, if you're willing to travel,
right,
and continue to improve, there are lots of different types of welding. So I know people who started with a $6,000 welding certificate and were making $42,000 a year. 3 years later, they're making $200,000.
Wow.
Some are welding underwater, making much more than that. Others are working for, like, Joe Gibbs Racing. Others work in nuclear power plants. The opportunities to simply stay in the welding lane and prosper are real. But the even bigger opportunity is the welder who picks up a plumbing certificate as well and then hires some buddies to do HVAC and mm-hmm. electrical. Mm-hmm. And then before you know it, they got three vans and a dozen employees, and that's a going concern.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about that is that one of the things that has happened over the last, you know, many years, people who work in the corporate America, they get laid off or they leave or whatever. They're always dying to own their own business. They don't want to answer to anybody anymore. You just talked about people essentially owning their own business. It's not necessarily, though, doing what people think in their mind they're going to do.
No, it's really interesting. Most small businesses begin and revolve around a skilled trade. Most of them are mobile. Most of them are vans. Most of them are people going out into the world to fix a thing that's busted.
But then somebody might say, I don't want to be a plumber. What's that? That's that. Sure. I've seen the guy come over, what he has to do. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Then welcome to the United States of America, where nobody can make you. All right. So you're going to be fine. Our skilled workforce is the thing that allows us to live the lives we want to live, because they're tending to the infrastructure we need. They're keeping us on the grid. So it doesn't make much sense to demean, disparage, or otherwise look down upon these jobs when we rely upon them so obviously.
When you are talking to people who want one of these, what's the barrier? Because, I mean, they have to learn that somewhere. Right. So it's not, if they don't go to college, well, where are they going to get this?
Well, the barrier to the best jobs that are going begging right now come in the form of stigmas, stereotypes, myths, and misperceptions.
Okay.
Most people simply are not up to speed with the fact that you can make six figures in heating and air conditioning easily.
No.
Parents want something, quote unquote, better for their kids.
Yeah.
They just don't know what better means necessarily. Yeah. Madison Avenue does a really good job at reinforcing all sorts of stereotypes. Mm-hmm. I say plumber, you picture a dude, 300 pounds, butt crack hanging out the whole routine.
Right. And someone who he was one of the dumb kids in high school.
That's right. That's right.
That's all. And that's the other thing too. People might come home and say, Mom and Dad, I would like to do this, but you're too smart for that.
That's right. All of that stuff, it's artifacts. From an old way of thinking, and it's simply not germane today. 11 million open positions today, 7 million men in the prime of their working lives, 25 to 54, not only not working, but affirmatively sitting out of the workforce.
What are they doing?
According to Nick Eberstadt, who wrote a great book on the subject, 95% of them are spending over 2,000 hours a year on screens. They're playing Call of Duty. They're going down some social media rabbit hole. They're embracing their inner avatar.
But who pays for their rent? How do they? I just don't understand.
Well, I hate to say it, but not them. So either society or their parents or some kind of disability check. That's just why for me, I always come back to the place that says, if you're willing to learn a skill that's in demand, I'll pay for it. Not a skill that isn't in demand. And not a four-year degree.
Is it better to try to find a plumber or somebody to be an apprentice? Is it better to go to a trade school? Or are those both good ways to do it?
I think they're both good ways. I don't think there's a straight path for anyone. You know, it's a long, crooked road, and you're going to work most of your life. So you might as well find something that you're good at, something that engages you, and something that, you know, allows you the opportunity to live something that looks like a balanced life. The trades do that in ways that many others don't.
You've probably seen Mike Rowe doing dirty jobs on TV. He also hosts a show on Fox Business, How America Works. Season 3 is underway.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. And where there's fire, there might be barbecues blazing or Boy Scouts camping or chestnuts roasting. Or there might be thousands of acres of forest burning out of control, threatening countless lives and billions of dollars in property.
So his focus in the latest episode, wildfire fighters.
And the sheer terror of fighting a fire that's truly out of control. What these people do on our behalf is mind-boggling.
You can also stream the show on Fox Nation.
You just get a look at what it takes to go headlong into a full-on forest fire.
I can't even imagine.
And you know what? To be honest, we can't even show you. We try. Our cameras get right in the middle of it. But until you're standing on the front line of a thing like that, until you hear the sound.
Yeah, what is the sound like?
It sounds like a locomotive.
They say that about tornadoes.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. That's true. Isn't it funny? because when the wind howls as the fire's blowing, that's when it just, it's unspeakable, you know, and the bravery that is required. I mean, typically what we do on this series, it's like Dirty Jobs, except it's not hosted. I present it and I narrate it, but I really wanted the viewer to have a better perspective of a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
And just simply look at the inside of industries that really don't get a lot of attention.
You ever thought about doing an episode where you actually take the viewer into a cubicle farm and show people what the monotonous life of someone in data entry or whatever job that, you know?
Well, the truth is, I didn't have to, because when Dirty Jobs started, that's right. The country was living it. The country had evolved in its work ethos into this place where the default position was the kind of day-to-day you describe. That's why Office Space was such a huge hit,
yeah.
Right? Because it, like, everybody understood. My God.
Printer, all the stuff in the...
All of it.
I Have Eight Bosses, all that stuff, yeah.
Yep. That was one of the first movies to both acknowledge and lampoon it at the same time. And Dirty Jobs came out before that, but it was ripe. No one was looking respectfully and with humor at this whole category of work.
In the end, Peter's happiest. What's he doing working at a construction site, right?
That's right. And smashing that copier to pieces.
Exactly. Again, the program is How America Works with Mike Rowe, episode 3. Season 3 is underway on Fox Business, also at Fox Nation. And the Mike Rowe Works Foundation, give us the website, please.
MikeRoweWorks.org. We are always awarding work ethic scholarships, raising money, and trying to make a more persuasive case for the jobs that we all rely upon.
Mike Rowe, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tammy Bruce.
What's on your mind?
Since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, we have watched in disbelief and shock at the use of children by the establishment to perpetuate fear and control. The world has known that children were the least affected by the virus and that this was obvious from the start. Yet schools were closed, children were forced to wear masks, and governments began to push children to be vaccinated. Even the World Health Organization now admits in a report earlier this year that children are at low risk and that the, quote, COVID-19 related measures are having a profound effect on their health and well-being, and for some, the impact will be lifelong. And yet, just last week, an unelected advisory panel at the Centers for Disease Control decided that the COVID-19 vaccine would be added to the childhood immunization schedule. While the CDC nor the federal government itself can mandate vaccines, so-called recommendations from the CDC throughout COVID were implemented by states and cities as though they were mandates. This particular schedule sets the standard and is implemented without question by many states as they determine children's school vaccination requirements. Inclusion of COVID-19 vaccines in routine vaccination program. This targeting of children, diminishing parents' rights, and the politicization of health care has got to end. Parents were radicalized throughout the last 2 years as they discovered the woke agenda in schools and became involved with their school boards in an effort to have their voices heard. For that, they were targeted and maligned by Biden's Department of Justice as domestic terrorists. That alone tells you how frightened the federal government is of the power of engaged parents. The concern about the CDC's action is rooted in very specific concerns. The Washington Examiner reports many of the vaccines on the childhood immunization list, including the hepatitis B and measles shot, already have full FDA approval for younger populations, unlike the COVID vaccine. People under 12 are eligible to get the Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna vaccines through an emergency use authorization granted by the FDA. In order to get full approval, more data is required from the vaccine manufacturer, including inspections of manufacturing plants. But all is not lost.
Certain governors are stepping up to assure their citizens that the CDC's new list will not be implemented in their state. Florida's Ron DeSantis said this, "As long as I'm kicking and screaming, there will be no COVID shot mandates for your kids. That is your decision to make as a parent." While Alabama's governor, Kay Ivey, stated, "Here in Alabama, the parents make decisions when it comes to their children's health care. We do not mandate the COVID shot for kids, nor will we ever." 20 states have already passed legislation prohibiting schools from implementing COVID mandates on students and or staff. Some measures, however, apply only to vaccines that do not have full FDA approval. Others only apply to higher education. Parents, grandparents, and families everywhere need to make their feelings known to governors and state representatives about this shocking action by the CDC. After many governors became tiny tyrants during COVID, some states have already changed the emergency powers their governors are able to wield. But more needs to be done. The totalitarian instinct of certain politicians must never be allowed to prevail again.
This is Tammy Bruce, Fox News contributor.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.